Support for the morning show comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe. Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. Support for the morning show also comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses are designed for the working adult. More information is available at carthage.edu/grad. And we welcome you to the Friday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. We'll begin today's morning show, as we have each day this week, with State Representative Corey Mason, offering his perspective from Philadelphia on the Democratic Convention. And then Jeff Robert, political science professor at Carthage College, will be offering his analysis of the convention as a whole and what stretches ahead in this upcoming presidential campaign as it reaches fevered pitch. Stay with us. And we begin this Friday morning show, as we have begun all the previous morning shows this week, with State Representative Corey Mason from the 66th District in Racine. He has been in Philadelphia at the National Democratic Convention as a delegate, and we've begun each and every morning show while he's been in Philadelphia, hearing from him as someone on the floor of that huge hall. What it has been like to experience what the rest of us have only experienced by listening to the radio or watching television. And Representative Mason, first of all, we welcome you again to the morning show, and I want to thank you for the time you've taken this week to join me in this way.
It's been my pleasure. It's been my pleasure.
So there's been plenty of excitement in this convention, and of course, the designers of such events are always mindful of the climax and of trying to sort of crescendo to exactly what you want in terms of the peak of excitement on that last night. To what extent do you think the organizers of this convention were successful in that?
Oh, I think it was a very successful convention. I mean, I think it did everything that we hoped it would do. I mean, it brought the Bernie campaign squarely on board with Hillary's campaign to win the presidency, and as importantly, to beat Donald Trump and all the, you know, really disconcerting things that he's talking about this year. But it did it really, really well last night in terms of just how we talked about what America means and how inclusive we hope that it'll be and how to move America forward. And a very, really humanizing and moving introduction of Hillary Clinton by her daughter, Chelsea, last night. We also had, before that, there was some amazing speakers. The pastor who's been leading the Moral Mondays campaigns in North Carolina gave a rousing speech that brought everyone to their feet. And then there was a pair of Gold Star parents who were there, Muslim parents whose son was killed in Iraq in the line of duty, who gave a real impassioned speech about, you know, them giving the ultimate sacrifice for this country and being Muslims and how hurt they were by what Donald Trump was saying and how dangerous they felt he would be as the president. So it was really an amazing platform. And then, you know, Hillary came out and gave as good a speech as I've ever heard her give. And one of the things I wish she would do more often, and she actually talked about how historically important it was for a woman to receive this nomination and what that means for how America sees itself and how little girls see themselves and what that means as a country if we can move forward and finally elect a woman to be president of the United States. So it was a really well-done speech on her part. She hit, I think, all the important notes. She acknowledged the Bernie people and their concerns, but she was also clearly making an appeal not just to Democrats in that hall, but to Democrats and independents and even some Republicans that were listening at home.
There were a few Bernie Sanders people in the hall, we're told, who from time to time at least were trying to stir up their own chants and so on, typically dominated then by Clinton supporters with chants of Hillary, 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 and so on. Were you aware of that in the hall? Is that the way it felt to you?
Yeah, I mean, you could hear it a bit. I mean, and to be clear, I mean, the Bernie people, really, it was like Bernie people from California.
Right.
There's been a contingent of Bernie California, Bernie, you know, Bernie or Busters, the few that still remain that are out there seem to be from California. They really objected most when the generals came out to talk about why they were, the retired generals came out and talked about why they were endorsing Hillary. And there it wasn't them chanting Bernie, it was them chanting no war. So it was, you know, we have a peace contingency within our party who didn't feel it was appropriate to have a retired general there talking about the presidency. And so there they were chanting no more war. So it's a little bit different than what we've seen in previous nights. But, you know, I mean, yes, there are some in California who are not yet on board with Hillary. But, I mean, there were 1,900 Hillary delegates. I would say 1,850 of them left this convention supporting Hillary Clinton. Mostly because Bernie Sanders asked them to. You know, I mean, it was a full-throated endorsement. He finally made the motion at the end to give Hillary the nomination. It was really what we needed to accomplish as a party to get everyone squarely behind Hillary Clinton, but also letting the Bernie people have their say and air some grievances about the process and policy. And it accomplished exactly what you want a convention to do. It was really not only historical in that we have nominated a woman who will be the president, but it was actually a really well-run convention when you look at, not just compared to how bad the Republicans was last week, but just if you look at previous conventions that Democrats have done, this was extremely well done.
Right. And although we touched on this briefly, probably the, in fact, without a doubt, the darkest shadow was this whole matter of leaked emails and so on, which is the shadow under which the convention got underway. Looking back, how would you assess the way in which the organizers of this convention, the inner circle of the Democratic Party at the national level, how would you assess the way in which that controversy was handled?
Well, I think it was handled extremely well. You know, I mean, first of all, I mean, to be clear, I mean, it's just sort of this really bizarre chapter in American politics that I can't remember, when a foreign government hacks one party's emails and then arranges to have them leak just before their convention starts. It's a bit more spycraft than we're used to having in the middle of a convention. But nonetheless, regardless of who decided to leak it, I think the party leadership and Hillary Clinton very wisely said, we're not going to have this convention call into turmoil over Debbie Wasserman Schultz and her emails. You know, she's got to step down for the good of the party. And to her credit, Debbie Wasserman Schultz did. And I know that must have been very hard for her, because, you know, this is a historic moment for her as well. And I think she was probably really hoping to be able to gavel in the convention and chair the, you know, really historical convention. But conventions are really about sort of like everybody coming together. And to do that, there's some negotiating there. And so, you know, on the first day, it was really, you know, some Hillary delegates were initially nervous. They're like, wow, these Bernie people are really, you know, it seems like they're getting their way on everything, and they keep raising all these concerns. But that's exactly what conventions are supposed to do. So they got to raise the concerns about the emails and Debbie Wasserman Schultz. There was discussion about the superdelegates process. There was discussion about the platform. So really on three key things that they really wanted to see happen in terms of how the Democratic Party works and functions, they were able to get those done early on in the first day. And then Monday night was capped off with Bernie Sanders himself talking about what they've done and endorsing Hillary. And then Hillary last night saying to the Bernie supporters, thank you. And, you know, we've written this progressive platform together. Now let's go make it happen together. And it was a really very well done appeal.
Can you say a quick word about what you have been, you and your fellow delegates, particularly your fellow Wisconsin delegates, have been busy doing in Philadelphia, aside from sitting in that huge hall and hearing one speech after another. There is more to attending a convention than that, of course, but whatever that other component is, most of us have no idea what that is because it occurs away from the cameras.
Yeah, it's a great question. So, I mean, believe it or not, you've got to get over there. Even though things don't get going until about prime time, you really need to get over there by about 2 in the afternoon. So there's sort of a hurry-up-and-wait sort of component to getting in there because it's a big deal. But so what happens is you wake up in the morning and you have to go to your state delegation breakfast. Because if you don't go and you're not there by 9 o'clock, you will not get the credentials you need to get into the hall. So that's sort of the most important thing you will do that day is get your credentials, which is just a nice piece of cardboard they give you that you put in a lanyard so that you can get through security and actually get onto the floor of the convention. So that's sort of the most important piece that you have to do at the beginning. But what's nice about this breakfast is we don't just grab breakfast. Is we had speakers, including Bernie himself came, but we had the mayor of L.A. who gave us a very impressive speech. We had Tammy Baldwin speak. We had our congressional delegation speak. We had Glenn Moore and Mark McCann there. But Cory Booker came and gave a speech. It was just an inspired time to hear from some pretty impressive speakers in their own right, many of whom would wind up speaking at the convention themselves. Hmm. And then you would go to, so in between breakfast and sort of needing to be in the hall, there's a labor caucus, there's a Latino caucus, there's a women's caucus. So there would be these meetings of legislators that would meet. And then lots of groups, Center for American Progress or some labor unions or Planned Parenthood or other groups would hold sort of policy discussions that you could go to. And I'm told that, 20 years ago that was a new thing and very few people did it. This week you could have gone to policy discussions, like 3 or 4 different ones, simultaneously all day, every day. I mean, just everybody had some sort of presentation they wanted to do to delegates one after another. And so you tried to go to as many of those as you could. The reality is, your day would run roughly from 7 or 8 in the morning until about 2 in the morning. And by the end of the week, you needed a nap. I mean, it was just, it was a long day. It was an exciting day, but, I'm also reminded that I'm not a college student anymore, not for about 20 years. And so your ability to sort of go for well into the night and then get up at 7 in the morning and bounce back. So you're sort of running on adrenaline and excitement. And it's just really a great way to experience this, the democracy of it all. So it's an exciting time. And then on top of it, you want to go see Independence Hall where the Declaration of Independence was signed and the first day I got here, I had a little bit of time. And so I went to the Philadelphia Art Museum. So, I mean, it's an amazing city here in Philadelphia and you want to allow yourself some time to take it in. So it's a remarkable way to experience our democracy, just given that this is where our country was born.
Mm. Just a minute or so remains, and this is too big a question for that, but nevertheless, now the hard work goes stretches
exactly
before
right.
You and other Democrats here in southeastern Wisconsin. What are your highest priorities? And in particular, how do you fold the presidential candidacy of Hillary Clinton into whatever your priorities are in the next few months?
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. So there's 102 days, we were told many times, starting today, between now and the election. We've got to go out there and work hard. And I think this is the year that's going to be really driven by turnout, and so for someone like me, that means making sure that people are turning out in Racine for Hillary, but it also means in other places around the state that we're reminding people to fill out the ballot, to not just vote for the presidency and then turn in the ballot. We've got a competitive DA's race here in Racine County with Tom Binger. We've got a number of assembly candidates across the state that we'll be supporting and hoping to be benefiting from Hillary's candidacy with some coattails, but we've got to remind people that they've got to fill out the whole ballot and not just the presidential ballot if we're going to see some of the benefits of what Hillary's going to do for this country, not just at the presidential level, but all the way up and down the ballot for federal office, for state office, and everywhere in between.
Hmm. State Representative Cory Mason, I've appreciated your time this week. Thank you so much. Best wishes. Safe travels.
Thanks so much.
And now we move to part two of today's morning show, just like that, with a faculty colleague of mine from Carthage College, Jeff Roberg, professor of political science. And as we did the day after the Republican convention finished up, we're going to be looking back over the last several days at what transpired in Philadelphia. And we'll also take a few moments to talk about what stretches ahead now for both the Republicans and the Democrats as this presidential race begins to really heat up in a dramatic way. First of all, Jeff Roberg, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you here. So, first of all, let's talk in kind of a generality about the way in which this Democratic convention unfolded, sort of overall, start to finish. What is your assessment?
So your listeners will remember last week when Jerry Mast and I were here, we talked about what conventions need to try and do. In general, they're a pivot to the general election and try to reach out beyond the base. This convention this week had a couple of tasks to do, not unlike the RNC, and starting with trying to bring out some form of unity at the end of the week to between the Bernie Sanders supporters and the Hillary Clinton supporters. And then moving beyond that to try then and reach out to independents and Republicans beyond. And we saw that in a variety of speeches throughout the week. So first day was kind of a nod more towards the Bernie Sanders supporters, and starting the road to unity, as it were. And so we had, of course, what I thought was a beautifully crafted speech by Michelle Obama, and then followed, of course, by Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders himself. And so you heard some appeals to what in general should we understand as who the Democratic Party is and where the Democratic Party needs to go, and in this case, getting behind Hillary Clinton. And both Michelle and Bernie, and of course Elizabeth Warren as well, but I'll stick with Michelle and Obama and Bernie Sanders for a moment, excuse me, certainly offered a full-throated endorsement of Hillary Clinton from the get-go, and that was important for bringing the party online and kind of saying, okay, this is who we are and this is where we're going. Mm. So certainly you heard, and a number of your listeners will have heard the various commentaries talking about unity and then going beyond that.
Mm. One of the interesting phenomenon that we saw, or at least heard for ourselves, I think some of the most telling examples of this was actually audio only, but was, for instance, Bernie Sanders speaking to the delegates from California and being jeered and booed mm-hmm. by these delegates who are such devoted followers of her, of his, yet feeling on some level profoundly betrayed by the choices which he has made. Were you surprised by that? And what does one make of that? And what does one do with that?
I'll phrase it this way. The vociferousness of Bernie Sanders supporters was it played interestingly in terms of the audio and the video and essentially shouting down Bernie Sanders himself when he said, "Look, we have to get behind Hillary Clinton and defeat Donald Trump," or actually phrased it as, "We have to defeat Donald Trump," which got big cheers. And then when he said, "We have to support Hillary Clinton and Tim Kaine to do this," which got the jeers. As you know, when we've talked in previous times, particularly last time would have been after the Wisconsin election, I have had a bit of skepticism about whether Bernie supporters would switch over to Hillary Clinton. And back then and the time before that I was on looking at the exit polls, it seemed to me that the Bernie's support was hardening. One of the questions that's usually asked on the exit polls is, would you vote, right, for Hillary Clinton if she were the nominee? And a large chunk of the Bernie supporters said no, roughly at that time about 30% or so.
Said no.
Said no, they would not. Jerry Mastin and I disagreed back then in terms of his view is he took a little longer view of, well, they need some time to kind of relax. And I have to say, when I saw the first day of the convention, all my old concerns, at least for Democratic Party, came up again in that regard. I think that the convention went a long way to healing some of those wounds and starting to deal with some of the for lack of a better term, bloodletting that took place. But clearly there are still issues there. And as your previous guest mentioned, kind of the wounds were opened afresh with the DNC emails a couple days before convention began.
Hmm. It would certainly be interesting to know, if that had not happened, what we would be talking about right now. If that sort of stirred up anger that wasn't there, or if it was an opportunity to reveal anger that was still there but under the surface, one way or another, chances are, at least in the details, this played out differently than if that email controversy had not occurred in the first place.
I would argue the anger was still there, and what this did was, for certain people, this confirmed everything that they thought about the Democratic Party as a whole.
And the process.
And the process, exactly. For others, this was an unfortunate issue, so to speak. So it depends on which side of the fence you happen to be sitting on. There are some serious concerns in terms of how the DNC has been doing its job, and certainly those have to be addressed. And these aren't new, by the way. This is not something of, the last year or two, and not something directly related to Hillary Clinton. This is something in the DNC for a number of years now. So hopefully they'll, as a party, get themselves sorted out in the same way that the Republicans have to do some sorting out themselves over the next couple of years. They thought they had done that after 2012, as Jerry and I talked about last week with the autopsy of what went wrong in that election. That book was thrown out. We'll see what results happen this time around.
Back to the Sanders matter for one more question. One of the parallels that occurs to me is that sometimes when you end up with passions running high and you have this kind of runaway train effect of that, this kind of zealous support for a candidate and or what he stands for, in some respects, it looks a little like what has happened on the Republican side as well, mm-hmm. that despite the Republican National Committee's every effort to sort of rein in Donald Trump and or his supporters and guide the party towards a destination that they had in mind as the winning possibility for November, at some point it gets away from you. There's just too many people with too strong a feeling, and they can't be reined in, at least in any of the sort of standard ways that maybe once upon a time would have worked. And it feels like kind of the same phenomenon in both instances, albeit with very, very different specifics.
There's an old line about revolutions tend to devour their young. So and certainly Bernie Sanders was a leader of the Bernie Sanders movement, if you will. But as we've seen, right, this goes beyond him as such. Now, a couple of different things there that you raised. First of all, before the Democratic National Convention, just prior to it, there was a Pew survey that was released that suggested about 90% of the Bernie Sanders supporters would vote for Hillary Clinton. Now, that, of course, also was prior to the latest release of the DNC, right, which brought all this back up again. But beyond that, this is going to be a very interesting election and potentially very good for the United States as a political system, I would argue. And that is that so that the quote-unquote diehards who are Bernie Sanders supporters, some of them, of course, are turning to Jill Stein. And so they're still staying engaged of the Green Party, I should say, still staying engaged, which is good. Potentially, right, if enough support goes that way, or to Gary Johnson of Libertarians for Republicans, and also some Democrats will go that way as well. This could be quite good for our political system. We've had a two-party system ingrained for, frankly, for our almost our entire existence. The names have changed over time, I'm not suggesting we're going to wind up a four-party system overnight, but perhaps, right, depending upon what happens in the general election and how the Republicans consolidate themselves, this could be good for the creation or at least the sustainment of a couple of other parties here. We've seen the Green Party kind of come and go over the years. We've seen the Reform Party was around for a little bit as well. But they've kind of died off. So there may be enough energy there to help out there, and I don't see that as a bad thing.
Hmm. That sounds like something that a political science professor would welcome, because it would create all kinds of interesting things to talk about in the classroom. As we look back over the convention, do a couple of moments stand out for you as especially memorable and or meaningful?
Sure. So we've got a number, and we can certainly talk about the big speeches in a moment in terms of the heavy hitters. But there were some smaller ones that I thought were particularly poignant. And some of those were the unscripted moments. And so one of those that I thought was important was Sarah Silverman's speech. And while the speech itself was scripted, there came a point which your listeners, if they watched, will know about, where Bernie Sanders supporters were chanting quite heavily, and this was the first day, and booing a lot of mentions of Hillary Clinton and such. She finally kind of called them out. It was really interesting, right? And she said, and she clearly went off script.
Right.
These
words were not on the teleprompter.
No, and the direct quote for your listeners who didn't get a chance to see this was, "Can I just say to the Bernie or bust people, you are being ridiculous," end quote.
And she's saying that someone who
was a
fervent,
Bernie, yes, a fervent Bernie supporter. In that regard, that was, you know, one of those unplanned moments. I thought we saw a couple of other moments that were extremely touching, and your earlier guest mentioned this as well, and that had to do with the father and mother of Captain Khan last night, U.S. soldier who happened to be Muslim, and I thought that was just a fascinating speech to watch. The reporters that were there suggested that there was no teleprompter for that, that this was all, you know, his own kind of remarks when he wanted, perhaps at the time, or I'm sure he had thought about these ahead of time.
This is a very
poignant moment.
And this is the speaker with the copy of the U.S. Constitution.
Yes,
right?
Who offered to lend his to Donald Trump. I thought that was an extremely poignant moment. Another moment for me was the Gold Star mother introducing President Obama the night before. So there were a number of these kind of moments at the convention that we knew what the big speakers were going to do. The ones that were unplanned, I thought they were planned, but the power of them was larger than I would have expected.
Hmm. I wish we had more time to really talk about the heavy hitters and what was significant. I mean, I can give you a little sliver of time, but not nearly as much as you would probably like. But I want to make sure to ask you this question. One of the trickiest matters, this was brought out in a really fascinating article in the New York Times, ahead of the fact, is that you want a convention to be orchestrated. I mean, I hesitate to use that word because it has some negative connotations in this context, but you want to orchestrate a convention in such a way that you have other people giving speeches that rouse the crowd, get people excited. But in a sense, you don't want that to happen too much. You don't want those earlier climaxes to overshadow what you want to be the ultimate climax mm-hmm. on the last night when your candidate finally takes the stage. Given that tricky matter and the fact that some spectacular speech giving was done, how successful do you think they were in achieving that sort of crescendo that you want to have happen? Or was any thunder stolen by some of those earlier speakers?
So, boy, that's a lot to unpack. Great question.
Sorry.
So, with the heavy hitters, one of them had a horrible job, and that I would say was Tim Kaine. He just where he was placed on the night of Joe Biden, Barack Obama. Yeah, that's a hard act of, you know, you're following Joe Biden, who did a wonderful speech, and then you've got Obama after you, and a few others as well, and to coin a Lloyd to use a Lloyd Benson expression, you're no Barack Obama or Joe Biden in that regard.
Yeah, right.
So Tim Kaine had a really hard road there, and so if we're talking about crescendo as such, he unfortunately was placed in a no-win situation. But of course, that's where he needed to be placed, because you want to, of course, send your delegates off on a high note with President Obama's speech, and go from there.
Right.
So in that regard, really tough. The convention as a whole was interesting. Obviously, they spent a lot of time focusing on issues that affect people's lives. And this was really in stark contrast to what we saw to the Republican National Convention last week, and Jerry and I spoke about this last week, where it focused much more on being anti-Clinton and fear and anxiety and ISIS, with very little focus on the economy, on jobs, and so forth, beyond terrorism and ISIS. And so you get this really stark contrast in this regard. I would argue that this convention, the Democratic National Convention, was certainly managed well in terms of how to approach issues. Again, as we talked about already, day one, talking about really, you know, unity and trying to bring folks into the fold and make sure they're understood, that they're heard, and then moving beyond that, and then, you know, different days. You know, day three started off with in prime time coverage, at least. With talking about gun violence and fighting the gun lobby, and you had Gabby Gifford come on stage with her husband, and then it turns to national security, and I mean, if there's a knock on this convention, and there are several to be made, the Republicans were right, or at least the Republican commentators as a whole, if your listeners watch Fox News, in terms of there was a lot less having to do with national security on this convention, and talking about ISIS and terrorism and foreign policy issues as such, and that was certainly the case. The Democrats made a concerted effort to, and frankly, the Republican National Convention allowed them this giant hole to talk about, hey, look, you know, we have these domestic issues that we need to deal with. But also, let's inject some optimism. Life is not absolutely as horrible as the Republicans have framed it. You heard President Obama give, for all intents and purposes, a "Morning in America" speech from Ronald Reagan's time. And so that's a different sense of the convention and what we saw.
What did you think of Mrs. Clinton's speech last night? I have heard some analysts say it was the best or one of the best speeches that she's given. But usually those compliments are couched within the context that she is not the kind of orator that, for instance, President Obama is, and many other people who spoke at this convention. It is not one of her gifts. Given that, how effective do you think she was last night in a very, very crucial speech?
So I would say in general she was effective, but we need to differentiate between who she was talking to at different times. And, of course, I would just do a shout-out to Chelsea Clinton as well. I thought the lead-in and Chelsea's speech was excellent in terms of humanizing her mother. So here in, for the Republican National Convention, of course, we had Ivanka introduce her father. This time we had Chelsea introduce her mother. And those two are actually maybe at least prior to this election. Don't know if that's still the case, but they're friends.
Right. I saw somebody point out that one of the striking contrasts between those two speeches, between the two daughters, was that Chelsea Clinton's speech was about childhood, growing up, what Hillary Clinton was like as a mother to her on an extremely personal level, whereas Donald Trump's daughter scarcely spoke in those terms at all.
Right.
It was almost all present day and almost none of that liner paper in the drawers of the college dorm room kind of stories. I mean, that just wasn't there. It's as though that's not why she was there.
Right. Tiffany Trump had given a little bit version of that of her father, but certainly we didn't really hear much of that from Ivanka. I thought, by the way, as a more general line, that one of the jobs of this convention was to put a human face to Hillary. She's the knock on her has always been that she's cold and distant, and you don't really know where you stand with her. But all of her friends always talk about, right, those who actually see her and deal with her on a daily basis, always talk about this different Hillary that is, friendly and helpful and smiley and everything else that doesn't come across when she's giving these speeches and meeting in public. And Hillary herself, commented at this point that I've always been good at the service part. I'm not so good at the public part, which I thought was a good moment of introspection for her. As far as the Hillary Clinton speech in general, as you probably and your listeners probably heard a number of commentators say, she did check all the right boxes in terms of her right out of the gate, she spoke to Sanders supporters and saying, look, your cause is our cause, was the quote at that time, and talking about their energy, talking about their passion, and that she would hope that they come and work with her on the issues that they care about. And, of course, the platform, incorporating a number of Sanders positions into the party platform. And then turning from there, talking about Donald Trump, not so much the Republican Party, but specifically on Trump himself, and talking about she had a number of lines that were memorable at the time. I'm not sure they'll be memorable down the road when we think of this speech, such as, he wants us to fear the future and to fear each other. And then she followed that up with an FDR quote of, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. There were a number of those kind of moments. I thought she did a good job in terms of saying, look, we're going to fix these things together, that, yes, folks have been left behind, There is still more work to do. And, of course, that some of these folks that have been left behind, this was not just during the Obama administration, right? These folks have been left behind prior to the Obama administration, and this is something more structural with our economic society. I thought that then your listeners heard a pivot to talk about who she is. And I thought she did that pretty effectively.
I thought so, too. I thought in many respects that was the most important part of the speech because it filled in a gap.
Yes.
I mean, not permanently and not for all voters who have these concerns, but that was, I would guess that is the first of many instances in which she's going to be speaking in those kind of terms.
And as the speech went on, you could see she got a lot more comfortable as well. And you started seeing someone who was really comfortable in who she was and what where she was and what she was saying. And the part about the, you know, the who I am, I like the line of, frankly, my job titles only tell you what I've done, not why, which followed up, of course, on earlier themes that have been presented by a number of speakers, including, of course, Michelle Obama and President Obama and Joe Biden and, you know, and Tim Kaine and right and all the heavy hitters that came later. And then, of course, saying that she wants to be president not only for Democrats but Republicans, independents. So she checked the box of reaching out, as it were. And, of course, talking about no ceilings, right? Mm. And the sky's the limit.
And that when any barrier falls, everyone
gains. Yes.
Yeah.
I thought the weakest part of her speech was what is it that she's going to do, and she and she's someone that has the details. But she chose, and she even made a joke about this in her speech about, you know, yes, I like policies and details and plans, but in this case, what she did was, I thought she would have been better served if she had cut down the laundry list a bit, and really kind of gone into a few. She did a kind of couple, but I thought it was something that was missing and would have helped the speech a little bit in terms of saying, look, this really is my plan, and Hillary's known for her 10-point plans and such, you know, but this is it, you know, and look, I make no apologies. This is who I am. This is what I like to do, and to give that out. And then, of course, turning to a pivot to national security, and I thought she had some good lines, which I'm sure we'll see repeated down the road, talking about Donald Trump can't even handle the rough and tumble of a presidential campaign, or a man you can bait with a tweet is not a man we want to trust with nuclear weapons. So I thought there were a number of good lines there, and then a pivot once again to domestic politics, talking about the Second Amendment. I thought she framed that as good as any Democrat can at this point. I'm saying I'm not here to take away your guns. I just don't want you to be shot by someone who shouldn't have a gun in the first place. And that was supported by earlier speakers where she had families who were victims of gun violence and also families of police officers who came out and spoke as well who had died in service to their communities. And so I thought that worked particularly well also. So her theme, tying it all up, right, stronger together, I thought it worked very well. I thought it was a good contrast to the Republican National Convention and particularly to Donald Trump's speech. And I think all of your listeners will enjoy very much the three debates that we have lined up where you'll have Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump on the same stage, perhaps with Jill Stein and Gary Johnson. We'll see if they get enough support to warrant being on the debate stage with them. It could be a lot of fun.
So what do you see as the we don't have much time. What do you see as the predominant priorities of both the Republicans and the Democrats going forward?
So each convention had as its primary task, right, to shore up its own support first. They've done that to a certain extent. Both Republicans and Democrats are in the same boat in terms of some of their own members will not support their main candidate. understanding that, then it's a matter of how far over the lines can you go in terms of reaching out to the independents, reaching out to the other party. I think at this point in time, it appears, and we'll know this early next week in terms of some of the new surveys that'll be done over the weekend and where the Democrats lie. I think the Democrats have a little easier road with that, partly because of the candidate that the Republicans have put forward. And so there is room to reach out. Unfortunately, so if your viewers watch Fox News after Hillary speech last night, what they would have seen was Sean Hannity talking about, you know, that this is, you know, not an America I can get behind. You know, her list of, as he phrased it, big government programs and such. But, you know, of course, for conservatives, they can't be happy with Trump that way either, in terms of some of the things that he suggested also. So this will really be interesting in terms of watching the reach out and where we go from here. There's a very stark contrast between these two candidates at this point in time.
It's going to be especially interesting to see how things play out here in Wisconsin.
Yes.
And, of course, this promises to be maybe harder fought than might have been the case once upon a time. What's your sense of what's going to unfold here in Wisconsin, and how much are we going to see of these two candidates?
Sure. And like everywhere in the United States, right, the question is down ballot tickets as well. In terms of Wisconsin, I mean, Paul Ryan, of course, will win his seat. That's a guarantee. In terms of the Senate race, that's turning into something very interesting. I would suspect that Russ Feingold will win that. In presidential elections, Democratic turnout is higher, and so he should win his seat back from Ron Johnson. We'll see how that plays out. Obviously, there's a long time before the election. In terms of the presidential election in Wisconsin, there's a number of questions there. As you know, the state is up for grabs. If I had to guess right now, if you were putting me on the spot, I'd say we probably go for Hillary Clinton as a state at this point in time. But 3 months, it's a long time. Anything can happen, and there's always an October surprise.
Right, right. Barring an October surprise, do you have a sense of where this is headed in November?
The polls at this point in time put this within the margin of error. Again, I'm looking forward to seeing what happens next week. Donald Trump did get a bounce out of the Republican National Convention. Depending upon which poll you look at, it was somewhere between 1 and about 9 points or so. So we'll see what happens with the Democratic National Convention and whether she was able to shore up some folks out there in terms of who she is and what she's arguing for the country. My guess would be at this point, based on some of the polling that has been done, that the Democrats, particularly Hillary Clinton, should win the presidency, or at least has a very good opportunity to win it. But this far out, there's a lot of intangibles, and I certainly wouldn't want to be held to that prediction at this point. But if you want to have me back closer to the election, we'll put it there.
You can bank on it. Jeff Roberg, professor of political science at Carthage College, I so appreciate you being here, and we look forward to having you and your colleague Jerry Mast back again as this presidential race continues. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you for having me, Greg.
On Monday, Brian Albrecht, the president of Gateway Technical College, will be joining us for his monthly visit to the program. Support for the morning show comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching, convenient evening and summer courses designed for the working adult. More information at carthage.edu.